He approached the rock mound at the center. It really was odd. Adeline circled it, noticing its shape, ridged in places, almost like... It's a chasm fiend, Adeline realized. He passed the face, a hollowed-out piece of stone that evoked the exact feeling of a chasm fiend's head. A statue? No, it was too natural. A chasm fiend had died here centuries ago, and instead of being blown away, had slowly crested over with Krem. The result was eerie. The Krem had duplicated the creature's form, clinging to the carapace, entombing it. The hulking rock seemed like a creature born of stone, like the ancient stories of Voidbringers.
Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 50 and 51 of Words of Radiance. If you haven't gotten here yet in your reading, please go back and make sure you are. I know there are a couple of you out there that are actually reading along with the show, so we definitely don't want you missing anything. If you have skipped an episode by accident, which can be done, I do it all the time listening to podcasts, make sure you're on the right episode. You don't want to miss out on the fun. So if you are exactly where you're supposed to be, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he came alone as I asked, but I will record everything and send it back to my generals. It's Jack. What's up, man?
How are you doing?
Good. You know the generals are the listeners, right? Like they're the...
The generals are the listeners.
Yeah, they're waiting in the wings, and if we get attacked while on the plateau run talking to Esh and I, they're going to back us up and come to the rescue.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and not only are they the listeners, but our listeners
are the listeners. It's so trippy,
that is
right?
Really cool.
Yeah, it's really
our
cool.
Patrons, our supporters, all the people that listen to the Storm Pod, You are the listeners.
You're right. That people call them Parshendi, but we're like, that's not their name. That's not my name.
That's not their name.
That's not my name.
But the real question is today with chapter 50 of Words of Radiance is, are they uncut gems or not?
They are. They're the most expensive kind of gems. They're so amazing. Are they Adam Sandler in a Oscar contending movie, Uncut Gems? I've never seen it.
You've got me there.
I don't know.
I don't even know. I think I stopped Adam Sandler after
Click.
I stopped watch. I don't know. Click. Maybe
Click
I got to Click.
One,
maybe
think,
not.
Yeah. Although Uncut Gems was good, apparently. I've never seen it. So let's move on.
Well, okay. So this is interesting. So it starts off with another Words of Radiance excerpt. And this is interesting because we get something called the Will Shapers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a new Radiant Order.
Right. So what I like about this little quote here, so I guess we can read it.
Sure.
And now if there was an uncut gem among the Radiants, it was the Will Shapers. For though enterprising, they were erratic, and Invia wrote of them. Capricious, frustrating, unreliable, as taking it for granted that others would agree, this may have been an intolerant view, as often Invia expressed, for this order was said to be most varied, inconsistent in temperament, save for a general love of adventure, novelty, or oddity.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
It seems like all the other orders, you can kind of like say, you know, this kind of person is this kind of order, but the Will Shapers seem to be a very different kind of group, different melange, if you were, of people.
A melange
of people that are kind of like put together. The thing I like about this is they seem kind of chaotic and wild, and like they're adventurers at heart. So for me, right. It makes me think of like a Kender or a halfling or a hobbit or something. You know what I mean? That are the wanderlust.
I'll just blurt it out now, because in terms of the second chapter that we're covering today, which deals with a conversation with Eshinai,
right?
She exhibits a different mood, like a different temperament.
Right. And they've always said she's an adventurer. She likes to wander.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what I'm wondering is if that was a little hint at her being a will shaper.
Or that she could have been if... Remember, they say that the Parshendi, or the listeners, cannot get... They don't get... They cannot have Spren that way. Remember, Syl said that. So
right.
But yeah, it's interesting, like, that you say that, because her
temperament changes with Adolin when they're having that.
And her personality before the stuff that happened in the interlude, you could say that she exhibits a lot of the stuff that's in this epigraph. So that's a good catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Okay, so we start off chapter 50, Uncut Gems. And first of all, I kind of, just the title of the chapter, maybe a reference to these characters being like uncut gems, that they need work to be honed upon, or that uncut meaning natural and unfixed, is that better? A little later on, we get to Sadeas, and he has uncut gems on his outfit.
Right.
And is that a statement of like that his personality is really rugged? Like
I think that an uncut gem is actually worth more, right?
I would assume
flaunting,
so. Yeah,
he's flaunting the fact that he's got all these uncut gems there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. Okay, so Adolin is sitting in a high back chair, sipping on wine, as the high storm rumbles outside. It says here, he should have felt safe in the bunker where he's in during a high storm, but it's like the high storm sort of always seems to undermine that sense of security.
Mm-hmm.
Like he never really truly feels safe when it's raging.
It's another way of being able to describe how vicious these storms are, right?
Like, yeah, it must be intense.
It's got to be, for
just
sure.
The sound of it.
We have to remember that this is mere moments after Shallan was out there, maybe a little bit too long,
right?
But wanting to be out there 6 seconds longer.
Six seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he raises his cup toward Elit, and he asks. He says, "Are you ready for our duel?" This is Adolin saying to Elit, "You've made me wait an entire week so far, Elit." This is a shorter, balding man who's also drinking wine. He's there with him. He says, "My cousin is planning to kill you for challenging me," he said, right after he kills me for agreeing to the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Turning towards Adolin, he says, "But when I stomp you into the sands and claim all of your family's shards, I'll be the rich one, and he'll be forgotten. Am I ready for our duel? I long for it, Adolin Colin." So
such
he's pretty
boasting.
Cocky, this guy.
Yeah,
this
he's boasting.
Like,
he's,
I'm really...
he's a little bit too much boasting.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little presumptuous considering how talented Adolin is. Like,
yeah.
Unless Elit's accomplishments, I guess, thus far haven't really been illustrated to us.
It didn't seem that way in the chapter before when Adolin was challenging Elit's cousin, and Elit stepped up and was like, "Oh my God, that's a lot of shards. I better try." It didn't seem like he was a great duelist, but we could be wrong.
"You're the one who wanted to wait," Adolin says. "The more time to savor what I'm going to do to you," says Elit. He says it with white lips. And then the next line, "Creepy fellow." Yeah. Adolin would deal with him in 2 days' time.
Right.
Before that, though, they had a meeting to look forward to tomorrow with the Parshendi Shardbearer, which loomed over him like a thunderhead.
Right, like which we literally just had, right?
What would it mean if they finally found peace? Yeah, so this is a big event. So I was actually really nervous. Oh, I'm always nervous reading these books. But
right.
I was really nervous anticipating, because I with these chapters, I wasn't sure if we were going to get the duel with Elit.
Mm-hmm.
And then that wasn't dealt with in this chapter. And the next chapter, we get the meeting with the Shardbearer. And it didn't quite go the way I had thought either.
Right.
So it's interesting. But there he is. He's kind of, he's got this, he's got a lot on his mind right now.
Yeah, he does.
So he sits upright, looks over his shoulder, because he hears Ellet behind him talking with someone else, and he says, well, geez, I know that voice.
Right.
Turns around, and then in the text it says, how long had Sadeus been back there?
Right.
Why hadn't Adolin spotted him when first entering? So there's Sadeus having a chit-chat, and again, like, Adolin doesn't see him coming.
Right.
I think we've had this before with Sadeus.
This is like a repeating, this happened at the meeting with all the high princes.
Right.
Adolin turned around, like, and bumps right into Sadeus. Sadeus is right into him. Yeah.
Right there. So I don't like it that our...
Well, Sadeus is now... I mean, I don't know if this is a done on purpose, but Sadeus has gotten the drop on... And I use quotes
there.
That's
what I mean. That's what I meant to say. Like, our protagonists just don't seem to be able to get ahead of him, or at very least... keep an eye on where he is.
Right. It's like, and it speaks for Sadeus's like his expertise in this. Why hadn't he spotted him? It's because Sadeus didn't want him to spot him right away.
No,
do you know what I mean?
You know what the secret to Sadeus here is slippers. Okay,
he's wearing slippers.
He wears slippers everywhere. Like, really quiet ones. Like, real sneaky slippers.
Like with little, like, pink puffs on the top. Like, just...
Yeah, like Isotoner. Like, you know, full on. Like,
he got
this
them
guy
for Christmas.
Is...
Yeah. His wife got them for him. Oh, just what I wanted.
Okay, so anyway, that's a little disturbing. Sadeus actually comes right over to him.
Yeah.
And he's wearing this short brown coat, embroidered green stock, and he's got these emeralds, as we discussed, these emerald buttons to match, and they are uncut emeralds. The High Prince took a seat beside Adolin, their backs to a hearth that a parchman had begun stoking. I put a little asterisk in my text here, because just that their backs are to the parchman.
Right.
So it just spoke to me about this potential threat that could be there, and you've got your back to it.
Right. A potential threat that is looming like a thunderhead.
Right.
But that they've put their back to, because to them it's nothing.
And so I just wanted to point that out, because if it turns out that there is indeed a connection to this, then all of those moments, just the way that's written.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point little thing to point out here. It's really nice.
Yeah. So Sadeus says, and again, a little condescending, young Adolin, what do you think of my coat? And you know what? I even stopped right there and I was like, really? You know what? You're reducing Adolin to what you think he knows anything about, which is only fashion.
Right.
Like, why would I talk to you about war? Why would I talk to you about shard blades? What would I talk to you about affairs of state, or a conversation about the high princes, and like none of that matters.
Yeah.
It's just you've been reduced to a fashion
pleasantries,
magazine.
Right? Like these like innocuous pleasantries. Like, what do you think of my coat?
Yeah,
you're only good for fashion.
I find it insulting. Yeah,
yeah,
it's like you're the Blackthorn son, and you're a competent fighter, and yada yada yada, all these things. No, you're just I value, and he even admits it. He says so.
Yeah.
So Adolin takes a gulp of wine, and he's thinking inside. He's thinking, I should just get up and walk away, but he didn't. And then his thoughts are like, killing the man right here, right now, would likely earn Adolin an execution, or at least an exile. It might be worth either punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's thinking, like, it might actually be worth it.
Be worth execution or exile.
Right.
So that just shows you where he's got a fever pitch.
Yeah.
You've always been so keen-eyed when it comes to style, Adolin. I'd know your opinion. I do think the coat is splendid, but I worry that the shortcut might be trending out of fashion. What's the latest from Leofor? So, again, I just, it just just tick me off so much. Yeah. Just speaking to him about fashion only. Like, so he's displaying these rings, the matching buttons. The rings emerald, like those in the jacket, was uncut. Mm-hmm. These uncut uncut emeralds. And you're right, it could be a display of just extreme,
like,
wealth.
Ostentatiousness, you know, like it's just so gaudy to wear these like this way that only people like Sadeus would do that, right?
Mm-hmm. But maybe a cut gem, when you make it more precise and like to show off the surfaces, and so that it allows light to reflect, yeah, and all this kind of thing. Maybe that shows, like, you know, more like discipline or like restraint, mm-hmm, or, you know, control. Like that's kind of what I was thinking, maybe about like an uncut gem versus a cut one. Mm-hmm. When it came to the characters, I couldn't really figure it out in my head. But
yeah, you know what? Now that we're talking about it, there is something there, but I'm not sure exactly what it is that Sanderson's trying to tell us with the uncut gems as opposed to the cut ones. Like, one, I don't know jewelry and diamonds and all that kind of stuff.
I don't
enough to be able to understand it. If there is a listener out there that knows gemology more than we do, please write into the show and let us know. That's a different season of the show. Jamology was the first season of the Storm Paul. This is gemology for gems, not jams. Totally different.
Yes, and not jellyologist.
Gelology. But you know what he says? He's like, the gemstones are recent acquisitions. I'm fond of them. And this is the, we've already heard of this happen before, where they, he says, gained doing a plateau run with Ruthar that they weren't supposed to be on. Remember?
Supposed to be on.
Yeah, we've already heard about this.
I underlined that too. And I was like, well, that's Adolin looking at it and going, yeah, you got them on an illegal run.
Right.
I remember.
Right.
And the next line, the first thing out of Adolin's mouth.
Yeah.
I hate you.
Yeah.
I fucking love
but
that.
But he's
so
whispered
much.
It. Remember the first time they had this confrontation at the meeting with the High Princes, he started speaking to Sadeus, and Sadeus says, now, don't, you don't want anyone to hear, do you?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So Adolin's a little more prepared for this confrontation. He right up for the front whispers it. I hate you. Yeah.
As well you should, says Sadeus. My former property is treating you well. I've seen their like patrolling the market here. I find that amusing for reasons I doubt I could ever properly express. They patrol, Adolin says, to create a better Alethkar.
He's talking about the Bridgemen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Sadeus knows that the Bridgemen saved the day.
Right.
Saved Dalinar and his men.
Yeah, it's
so
he says, you know, I find it amusing for reasons I doubt I could ever properly express. I think I could properly express it. He finds it funny because his property are now protecting property. And he finds it funny that something that used to belong to him is now in charge of protecting things that belong to others. He finds that hilarious because these things are nothing but playthings to me. And if that means they're protecting the things that everyone else wants, then how below me is all this other stuff too?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And almost even taking credit for, well, actually, if you want to talk about it, I'm actually protecting your house, right now.
Right.
Because those Bridgemen are mine.
Yeah. They're mine and they're doing their job now. But he doesn't gain any points here. Even though, you know, we know these men are free. There's nothing he can't have claim ownership over them anymore.
Right. So they patrol, Adolin says, to create a better Alethkar. And then Sadeus says, is that what Dalinar wants? I'm surprised to hear it. He talks of justice, of course, but he doesn't allow justice to take its course, not properly. Mm-hmm. And I know where you're going, Sadeus. Adolin snaps. You're annoyed that we haven't been letting you put judges into our war camps as High Prince of Information. Well, I'll have you know that Father has decided to let High Prince of Information? You didn't hear? I recently renounced the title. What? Yes, Sadeus says. I fear I was never a good match for the position. My Shalation temperament, perhaps. I wish Dalinar good fortune in finding a replacement, though from what I've heard, the other High Princes have come to an agreement that none of us are suited to these kinds of appointments. Shalation, that's an interesting reference, eh?
That's also, this is a little early info dump. Early info dump. Shalash info dump. Is the herald of beauty.
Right.
Right. And because maybe he concerns himself too much with aesthetics and beauty, and that's what he's like kind of into, he has a Shalation temperament, he's not suited for justice and investigations and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So really Aelin is thinking here, wow, like this is really bad. He's renounced my father's authority. He's renounced the king's authority.
Yeah.
And he found himself reaching to his hand to his side to summon his blade. And again, no, he had to pull the hand back. He'd find a way to force this man into the dueling ring. Killing Sadeas now, no matter how much he deserved it, would undermine the very laws and codes that his dad was working so hard to uphold.
Right.
So he's just showing such great restraint here.
By Sadeas renouncing the High Prince of Information here, he's saying that the title is unimportant to me, as it should be unimportant to everyone, as Dalinar's title of High Prince of War should be unimportant to everyone else as well. So by throwing away the title like it means nothing, he's saying Dalinar's position also means nothing. You know what I mean? The king has appointed me this, but I don't give a crap. The king has no authority here. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Do you think me an evil man, Aelin? That's too simple a term, Aelin snaps. You're not just evil, you're selfish. You're a selfish, creme-crusted eel who is trying to strangle this kingdom with his bulbous bastard hand. Eloquent, Sadeas says. You realize I created this kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
You only helped my father and uncle. Yes, men who are both gone.
I love this part.
The Blackthorn is as dead as old Gavilar itself. Instead, two idiots rule this kingdom, and each one, in a way, a shadow of a man I loved.
I love that line.
I know. I'm not strangling Alethkar, son. I'm trying with everything I have to keep a few chunks of it strong enough to weather the collapse your father is bringing. Don't call me son.
Yeah.
Fine. But I'll tell you one more thing. I'm glad you survived the events on the tower that day. You'll make a fine High Prince in the coming months. I have a feeling that in 10 years or so, following an extended civil war between the two of us, our alliance will be a strong one. By then, you'll understand why I did what I did. I doubt it. I'll have ran my sword through your gut long before that.
So what do you think about this here? This is like, it sounds like Sadeas has some future plans for them to be able to work together. Remember at the duel when he's sitting there watching Adeline, and Adeline's like proving to be one, a really great duelist, and two, he's able to hide how good he is from everyone else, but not from Sadeas.
Yeah, and Sadeas was admiring that, right?
Right, and then he starts thinking, you know, maybe there's something I can do with this boy. Like maybe things aren't lost, I can use this. And this seems like it's a good example of what Sadeas has in mind. Listen, you know, we're going to fight, but at the end of the day, when we come together at the end of the war that we're going to eventually have, our unity is going to be really good for the country. It's going to be really good for our nation.
What's really sinister to me about this paragraph, about this little speech from Sadeas, is that it tells us that he already believes that he's going to become High Prince. That his father, that Dalinar, is going to be eliminated.
Right.
So that's that right there. So Sadeas, just from that paragraph, he's telling us Dalinar is gone.
Right. Either by either by hook or by crook kind of thing. Either he's going to die by my hand or someone else's, or he will have lost his mind so much that you will depose him. Because remember, the idea here is that Dalinar is, at least Sadeas thinks, he's crazy. He is, what did he say here? He is a shadow of a man I loved.
I once loved.
Because he's not the Blackthorn anymore. He's not even really Alethi anymore because he's given up all those ideals. Right?
But you know what? But Adeline is, so Adeline actually disagrees with that. And it comes up in the text a bit later that he still is the Blackthorn.
Right.
Because he gets whatever he wants.
Right. Just by will, right?
Because no one stands up.
Yeah.
Force of will. And I wanted to talk to you about that too, because like all of this kind of intimidation kind of thing exuding from Dalinar is that will shaping.
Right.
Oh, that's true.
Is
right?
That
will shaping.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's right.
Huh, right?
That's cool. Like, I never put that connection. That's cool.
So we'll talk about it in a bit. So yeah, but there's even more to unpack here. Because Sadeas is saying Dalinar's not going to be there, but you will. And then after a long civil war between us, what that says right there is that Sadeas believes that he can't beat Adolin.
Right.
Because why not just take him out? Why embroil yourself in a 10-year civil war?
Right.
Why not just take him out? Well, you can't. Why? Because he's just as competent as you are.
Right. Or that at the very least, their princedoms are the strongest of all the princedoms, that at the end of it, they're the only ones that are going to be really left over. Or
but the Colin family took a major hit at the tower.
That's true. They did.
Right.
Well, the Colin family and their soldiers here at the war camps.
Right. The war camps. Yeah.
So because there's still everything that's still in Alethkar. Right. So
Alethkar. Yeah. Which we don't really deal with.
We don't know the state of things over there yet. We just know that the soldiers they brought here, they took a huge hit with. But there might still be a bunch of soldiers over there back home, right?
So Sadeas gets up and walks away.
Yeah, he gets up and walks away. And I love here, nearby, the short Bridgeman guard.
The Bridgeman? Dude.
Nods this is great. With respect after he says, you know, I'll ram my sword through your gut before that, Sadeas. And it's the one with the silver at his temples, which means it's Teft.
Teft.
So Teft is guarding. He sees Adolin stand up for himself and threaten Sadeas in this public space. And Teft gives him like a nod of approval. Like, yeah.
I know. I love that.
Yeah,
I love
me
that
too. Bit. I like that a lot. I like it when Sanderson tells us, without telling us the name of the Bridgemen that are guarding Renarin or Adolin,
but just
or Dalinar,
gives you a little
description,
clue.
Yeah, and then we can figure out who it is. I really like that. It's a nice little game within the book.
Yeah, it's a little breadcrumb. He's always leaving them. Adolin preferred to wait until the storm stopped, so he's actually waiting for the rain to stop because he didn't like the way the rain made his uniform look. So he's just hanging out.
Fashion boy.
Eventually, though, Eventually, though, he does start walking out of here through the outer market, strolling around. There is a little mention here that gardeners had begun growing ornamental shale bark. So I wanted to give a little shout out to the gardeners that are present here.
In the
war camps. So he's referring to now. He's thinking about his bridgemen that are there following him and protecting him, and he refers to them as two insufferable bridgemen. But they seemed like amiable enough fellows, particularly when they were away from their commander.
Right. So he doesn't really hate the men who are like protecting him. He just really dislikes their captain.
Captain Kaladin.
Yeah, it's a.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Adolin just didn't like needing minders.
Mm-hmm.
So again, he's just not really that interested in being protected. Which is probably why he just can't stand the fact that Kaladin came in and saved the day, right?
Right. So. And we know that in his conversation with Shallan in the previous chapter, he sort of admitted to Shallan that he was embarrassed for needing to be saved out on that plateau. And that's kind of why, that it kind of informs how he feels about Kaladin. Because Kaladin came in and saved the day, and he's a little embarrassed by it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, of course he is. So he's thinking about that. He's also thinking, he says, why did plants spend so much more time in their shells out here than they did back home?
Yeah, that's curious, isn't it?
And he's thinking about Shallan. This thing with Shallan, it was working, wasn't it? It always works at the beginning, though, so don't get too enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I like that he's thinking about her, too. And actually, he continues that on because he's in the market and he's looking to buy her a gift.
Right.
But it says here, he was thinking that she was marvelous, exotic, witty, not smothered in Alethi propriety.
Mm-hmm.
So she just blurts out things, tells it like it is, speaks her mind, all the wonderful stuff that we got from the previous chapters.
Do you remember last chapter when we recorded and you were like, I wonder, because everything was from Shallan's point of view when they had their date. And you were like, I wonder what he's thinking about her
he's thinking,
the entire
time.
And I said, we can pretty much, you know, figure out how he feels about her through his actions by, like, you know, telling too much about what's happening. He's opening up to her. He's relaxed. He told her about the poop stuff. Like, you wouldn't do that if you weren't interested.
He really did.
But now we actually get how he thinks about her. She's marvelous, exotic, witty. And I love this part.
She was
smarter than him, but didn't make him feel stupid about it. That's really great.
That was a large part in her favor. So that almost seems to me that he's had other dates that maybe were smarter.
Well, we know he dated Danlin, and Danlin's a scribe and is very intelligent.
Yeah. You
know,
very
she's part of this plot to kill the king, so she's got to be somewhat intelligent to be involved in that.
Sure.
And she probably made him feel stupid. Let's just say it was Danlin that made him feel stupid because,
maybe,
you know, we don't like her anymore, so.
We don't.
Who's that girl?
Eventually reaching Dalinar's war camp, so he ends up walking because he wanted to. And he's looking around and he says, what will actually happen to this place when the war stops? If it would end someday, perhaps tomorrow, with negotiations with the Parshendi Shardbear. The Alethi presence wouldn't end here, though, not with the Chasm Fiends to hunt. We've talked about that before.
Right, exactly.
So, after spending some time with the jewelry shops looking for something for Shallan, which I thought was nice, he does eventually reach his father's complex.
Mm-hmm.
And even here, though, he's still... This is Adolin sort of... maybe almost sharing a bit of Sadeus here, actually, now that I think about it. Wasn't it about time that we built a proper mansion when he's looking around at the yard and the sort of bunker-esque dwelling that they reside in? A proper mansion, he's thinking. So seems a little opulent, like a little bit of display, you want to show.
He's a high... We can't forget. He's a high prince, right? He's a light-eyed high prince, so...
Yep. He hesitated, stopping at an intersection and looking to the right. He sees some figures in the shadows, and he can hear hushed whispers.
Yeah.
And he says, what is this? Soldiers, what have you found? He's looking over at them, and the men scramble together and salute. Looking over to where there are doors that head into their wing, where Dalinar, Edelin, and Renarin make their quarters, these doors lay open. What was going on? Normally there were two or four guards, not eight.
These are yet again... These are bridgemen again, right? So,
yeah, and why was there a parchman wearing a guardsman uniform here, holding a spear?
Yeah.
Sir, says a lanky, long-armed man at the front, we were just heading in to check on the High Prince when... Adolin didn't even hear the rest. He pushed through and headed inside. Inside, illuminated on the floor of the sitting room, are Morvel's scratched glyphs.
Mm-hmm.
He kneels down trying to read them, but unfortunately, they hadn't been drawn in any kind of picture that was good for him. Another one beside him, though, he says 32 days, said one of the bridgemen, a short Azish man.
We know who that is. That's Sigzil.
Right. Sigzil. Seek the center. Have you told this to anyone? Adolin asks. We just found it, the Azish man said. Post guards at either end of the hallway. And send for my aunt.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
It's been a few chapters since we got some scratches in the wall or in the floor or whatever, so it's nice that we've finally got some. It's a nice reminder.
And I've got to be nice to Navani today. That's my goal. My goal is to be nice
to
Navani.
We're going to cover that in the info dump, so don't you ruin the surprise.
I'll try to be nice. I'll try to calm down my heightened sense of being suspicious of everybody.
Mm-hmm. So we get a scene change here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Adolin summons his blade, then dismisses it, and then summons it again. He's just doing this over and over as a nervous habit.
Mm-hmm.
He's thinking about these foreboding markings, and he's actually in a room, or in this room, with Dalinar, Navani, and is there someone else present? No. Not currently.
Oh, well...
Adolin wanted to use...
Oh, kept the... closed the door, kept the bridgemen out.
Kept the bridgemen out. Yeah. Dalinar and Navani, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just the three of them.
Right.
I think at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Dalinar had proven that he was sane. Aunt Navani almost had an entire document of the Dawn Chant translated using the words of Father's visions. The visions were from the Almighty, so it all made sense. Now this... They were made with a knife, Navani said, kneeling beside the glyphs. "This knife," Dalinar replies, holding up a side knife of the style most Light Eyes wear, and he says, "It was my knife." Mm-hmm. The edge of the knife was blunted and still had flecks of stone on it. They'd found it just in front of the door to Dalinar's study, where he'd spent the high storm alone.
Mm-hmm.
Navani's carriage had been delayed, and she'd been forced to return to the palace or risk being caught in the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't with Dalinar. "Someone else could have taken it and done this," Adolin says. "They could have sneaked into your study while you were consumed by the visions and come out here." The other two were looking at each other, or rather looked at him. "Often," Navani says, "the simplest answer is the right one."
Right. And in Roshar, this is known as Ali daughter Haswith's razor.
Ali what?
Ali daughter Haswith's razor is this philosophical...
You're talking about Occam's razor?
Yeah, but in the Rosharian world, it's written by a different scholar, and I chose Ali daughter Haswith. Okay, never mind. Hey, okay. trying for some Rosharian humor here, guys. Just testing it out.
It's great. It's great. I love it.
Thank you. Thanks.
The simplest answer is always the right one. What do you think?
Actually,
because you might know too much, so you might know the answer.
I can say something without spoiling everything. I would say that this is a simple answer, but this is a very complicated thing. You know, I don't think there's any simple answers here with any
correct.
Of this stuff.
Because even if it is Dalinar doing it, mm-hmm. he's doing it when he's alone.
Right.
It's never when anyone's around. And who or what is doing it?
Right.
Is he being controlled by another entity?
Yeah,
like in the visions when he's occupying a...
Is the Almighty doing it through him? Because, you know, he's having these
right.
visions through the Almighty. So is it the Almighty?
Right.
Is it something else?
Right.
Is it even him? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no...
Is it even him?
Things are not as simple as Navani is saying here. Often the simplest answer is the right one. I would rail against that. There's no simple stuff going on here. This is all very complicated.
Very complicated, because either way, there's so many questions to ask. If it's Dalinar doing it,
mm-hmm.
and we only asked a few of the questions,
right.
What if it's the Blackthorn? Like, what if the Blackthorn is like a separate being
right.
that he no longer is, and the Blackthorn is trying to speak through these glyphs to him?
Right.
I don't know that. But
yeah, you don't know that. You're just making that up on the spot, so.
Yeah. And then contrary-wise, if it is someone else doing it, wow, that's some... Well... I think if someone else is doing it, that's some pretty sneaky stuff. So we're back to slippers right there.
Slippers again. Oh, maybe it was Sadius with his slippers.
Well, there you go. He slips in.
Slips.
You know.
Slips out.
Slips in. Yeah. Yep. Maybe a slip. There could be a bathrobe.
I mean,
involved here with the slippers.
Navani is right here because, you know, as much as I rail against it. She is right. The knife. It seems like the knife that was used to do it was Dalinar's knife. So, and because no one was with Dalinar tonight in this moment to stop him from doing anything and getting up during his vision, it looks shitty, right? It looks really bad for him. So I get it.
It totally does. I mean, I don't think we have enough to go on right now,
for sure.
But if there is something, I can't say it.
What do you mean you can't say it?
I promised I wouldn't.
You're saying that maybe it was Navani?
No, I'm not saying that.
Oh, okay.
Her carriage was delayed. I think right.
It's a good alibi.
Mentioned.
I think it's a good alibi.
It's mentioned.
I'm
trying not to read so much into all this. And she's saying the simplest answer is the right one. Like,
right.
Okay.
Don't think too hard about it, boys.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll stop.
Yep.
So his father stood tall. Dalinar Colan never seemed to have looked so tall as he did right now with his hands clasped behind his back. I want to draw a little thing there, actually. Again, looking eastward as he's thinking about all this.
Mm-hmm.
Hands clasped behind his back. That's exactly the same pose that Sadius approached Adolin just a little earlier in this chapter.
Same?
Hands clasped behind his back.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Dalinar was a rock, a boulder, too big for even storms to move. You don't remember anything, Navani asks Dalinar. No, he turns to his son. I think it's obvious now that I was behind each of these. Why does that bother you so, son? Well, it's the idea of you scribbling on the ground, lost in a vision, not in control of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The Almighty's path for me is a strange one, son. Why do I need to get the information this way? Scratches on the ground or on the wall? Why not say it to me plainly in the visions? It's foretelling, you realize, Adolin says. Seeing the future? It's a thing of the Voidbringers. Yes, Dalinar says. Seek the center. What do you think, Navani? The center of the Shattered Plains? What truths hide there? Well, the Parshendi, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But no man had been there, only the Parshendi. And to the Alethi, the word center just referred to the vast openness of the unexplored plateaus. What do you think about all this?
Well, they're inferring a lot from three words, seek the center, right? So
seek the center. Yeah.
It's as ambiguous as unite them. How many times have you thought a different answer to what unite them means?
Yeah,
you've come up with 17 million of them or whatever. So seek the center is just as, you know, mysterious and vague.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's right for them to think about the center of the Shattered Plains. But
seek the center always reminds me of like doing one of those mazes,
right?
You know, where like you go in from the outside and you go into
find
the center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, Aelin's father says, but where? Maybe they move around. Maybe there's no Parshendi city in the center. They would only be able to move if they had soul casters, Navani says, which I personally doubt. They'll have entrenched somewhere. They aren't a nomadic people, and there's no reason for them to move. If we can make peace, Dalinar says, reaching the center would be a lot easier. Have the bridgemen fill those scratches with creme, and then have them pull the rug over that section of floor.
Right.
I'll see it done. Good, Dalinar says. After that, get some sleep, son. Tomorrow, it's a big day. Father, were you aware that there is parchment among the bridgemen? Yes, there has been one among their numbers from the beginning. But they didn't arm him until I gave them permission. Why would you do such a thing? Out of curiosity. He's curious?
Yeah.
Tell me, Navani, assuming these numbers are counting toward a date, is it a day when a high storm will come? 32 days, Navani asks. That will be in the middle of the weeping. 32 days won't even be the exact end of the year, but 2 days ahead of it. I can't fathom the significance. Ah, it was too convenient an answer anyway.
Right.
Very well, let's allow the guards back in and swear them to secrecy. Wouldn't want to inspire a panic.
Right. Interesting.
So it looks like the 32-day countdown isn't necessarily going to be in a high storm that they're predicting.
Right. It's during this long period where it rains the entire time. So when in high storm season, let's say, for lack of a better word, there's a high storm. It comes furiously. Yeah. It's over. There's the riddance, which is like a soft rainfall afterwards, and then it goes away. And then there's clear skies until the next high storm comes. The weeping is like a whole chunk of time when it rains constantly.
Right.
There's no storm. There's no high storm. You don't have to be afraid of it, but it's constantly raining.
I think maybe this countdown is really, it's going to add up to potentially losing a character. That would be my prediction.
It's definitely seems foreboding.
Weeping, if it's called
the weeping. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like it. Well, because you've already had this crazy assassination attempt.
Right.
Dalinar can't stop it. Adolin can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bridgemen are unable. Kaladin can't stop it.
Yeah.
Well, at least not right now.
No. As much as they train.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, a training is not going to do this. I mean, you need a deeper understanding of these powers that some of these characters are possessing.
Right.
That's what you need.
What's your highlight?
But anyways, the highlight of this chapter? Uncut gems. Oh, I think when Adolin says, I hate you,
Yeah.
When Teft is gives the nod, I think that's really good.
It's great.
Yeah, I think I'll stick with that. What's yours?
Mine is, it's just Sadeus as a whole. His character, the way he's written, you know, that line that I said, the two of them,
the two of them
are shadow of the men I love. One being the son of one of the men I love, and now Dalinar being not the same Dalinar he remembers. You know, things have changed.
Wouldn't it be just crazy? Wouldn't it be just crazy that it all turns out to be that Sadeus was kind of right?
That's why I say to you all the time, whenever we get a Sadeus part in these books, he's so convincing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's so convincing. And then when he says to Adolin, he's like, when we have, you know, after our war and we ally and unite together, you'll see what I did and you'll understand it. Like, he's so convincing. He's so well written, man. I love Sadeus. He's such a good bad guy.
He's such a good bad guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. But again, actually, you know, I think I'll change my highlight. I mean, I love those other two bits. I hate you. Because I wasn't expecting that out of Adolin. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the reducing him to fashion.
Yeah, that's
it cuts like a knife. He just comes right in.
Yeah.
And he's just, it's a power play right off the bat. My first interaction with you, what do you think of my coat?
Yeah.
And he says, I would have your opinion.
Right.
I would have it.
Your opinion on fashion matters so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good.
I don't know.
It's a really good part.
I suppose that's it. And then, of course, ruminating on the Uncut Gems. I didn't get an alternate title for this one because I kept thinking about Uncut Gems and what it means to describe these characters, even the landscape, and what is better, to be rough and, freshly dug out of the earth, let's say, or if you polish, chip and hone, and allow it to be, I guess, more than what it was naturally, let's say.
Right. It just could be a gloating thing because, you know, the gem, like the one of the ones he's wearing on the ring, which is an uncut emerald, like, he won them. He just won them recently. I love them. So he's flaunting. He's not even like, he's showing, this is the one I just won. And I don't even care enough to get it fixed. I'm just wearing it because it's like a trophy for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, it might have to do with like how he treats the High Prince of Information. He's like, it's below me.
Yeah.
And even getting my jewels fancied up is below me. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. There's something there. I'd be really curious to hear from a gemologist.
I'm not sure. Well, this is it. Like maybe an uncut gem. We should have, I suppose, researched this a bit better. But maybe an uncut gem is cut or is angled to have, you know, like it could be polished or have, you know, I think
that an uncut gem can store less stormlight because there's less reflecting, right? I think that's what it is. Because when you cut a gem, it's to make sure that it can catch as much light as possible so it can sparkle more.
Right.
So an uncut one would have less stormlight, I think, in it, right? Anyways,
that's an even more fascinating thing because it's like he's rejecting those powers,
right? Or even the concept of stormlight or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
it's curious.
And I mean, you might know more about that than I do.
I don't think I have. I don't know really any more about the gems and how they're cut and uncut and how that matters. I really don't. We'll just have to get an expert on. We'll do a gem expert episode as a bonus episode or something.
So chapter 51, heirs. What do you think?
It's a good one. It's kind of intense, to be honest.
It's intense.
It's the first time we get to see Eshonai after her moment in the storm when something changes about her, and you can clearly see it in this chapter that she is not speaking like the Eshonai we got to know in the first
In the first epigraphs, or she's not even the same Eshonai that talked to Adeline on that plateau run that time that said, you know, I want to talk to your father. Like, that's important.
So, and that's why I was making that connection with this mm-hmm. will shaping sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in short, if any presume Kazala to be innocent, you must look at the facts and deny them in their entirety. To say that the Radiants were destitute of integrity for this execution of one of their own, one who had obviously fraternized with the unwholesome elements, indicates the most slothful of reasoning. For the enemy's baleful influence demanded vigilance on all occasions of war and of peace.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have, an account that the Knights Radiant executed one of their own, Kazala.
Yeah.
For having unwholesome associations with the elements.
Well, I think...
Whatever that means.
Fraternized with unwholesome elements. So not...
Right.
She didn't have... she didn't fraternize with unwholesome elements like very bad fire or no good water.
Right, yes. No.
But,
yeah.
But like...
With that, no, yeah. No.
Yeah. Maybe with the enemy.
Yeah. Hmm.
Right? So... It sounds like
It's interesting that it's worded that way, though. I have to say, fraternize with the unwholesome elements.
Yeah.
Like elements. I mean, why wouldn't you say enemy? Like elements. It's like something like primordial, something primal.
Hmm.
Like, you know, that you have fraternized or used something that you shouldn't have.
Right.
You know, it's like accessing the dark side, let's say. You know, like...
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, the next day, Adeline is stomping his feet into his boots after having a morning bath. And he seems refreshed in a way. He's come to two decisions on this day.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he wasn't going to worry about his father's condition, about the visions, the whole thing of it. Wanting the Knights Radiance to return, preparation for disaster... Adeline had already decided to believe that his father was not mad, and worrying about it anymore was pointless.
I like this.
So I like this too, because he woke up thinking, you know, all these doubts, because yesterday he was thinking, there's my father scribbling these glyphs on the ground. If it's him, this is madness. What does this mean?
Yeah.
It's not good. But then he wakes up going, you know what? No, I'm not going to doubt my father. I'm not letting this in. I am going to stand firm and be with him, be beside mm-hmm. him through mm-hmm. it, regardless of what the outcome is.
Yeah, I already decided I believe him. So why? What am I doing?
Right.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
I love that. And then the other decision might get him into trouble.
Yeah, we find out about what it is later.
Yeah, he leaves his quarters and he enters the sitting room where Dalinar was already there planning with Navani, General Kahl, Tashav, and Captain Kaladin. Renarin was also there,
frustratingly
guarded.
Yeah,
guarding the door, wearing a Bridge of Four uniform. He'd refused to give up on that decision of his, despite Adeline's insistence.
Right.
So even his brother is like, "Hey, like, what are you doing? No, this is something I'm doing. I want to do this."
Yeah, I am.
That's really cool.
It's really neat. It's really cool that Renarin is doing it, but. I've been thinking about it since when I read this chapter. I was thinking mm-hmm. about this whole thing, and I sort of get why maybe Moash and some of the Bridgemen might be like against or kind of insulted that he's in this group now. You know, these men had to go down the Shattered Plains and fight every single day and survive the worst possible scenario to be in this very special group of theirs. And then a Light Eyes comes along and is just allowed to go in because of who his father is. It's like, you know, you toil for four or five years in high school to get good marks, to be able to accept it to a school, and then someone just gets in because their father or mother can donate a whole bunch of money to create a new wing at a university. Do you know what I mean? Like, it feels privileged.
Yeah, but Renarin is putting in... I'm going to push back on this a little bit. And actually, I had a personal story just told to me recently by a friend of mine in one of my D&D groups where he was speaking to me about, in his case, about how some... So in his case, he's part of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And And some people in the military have a position that if you didn't serve in this particular situation or war or what have you, then you don't know what you're talking about and you can't relate and you're out of the club.
Right.
And I'm just going to push back on this idea, although I do understand what you're saying.
It's almost gatekeeping. And, like there's well, like gatekeeping.
It's gatekeeping, and it's also like trying to tell another you know human being that you can't possibly understand this
right
in another way. And I disagree with that in a fundamental. Like I mean, you can talk about the experience, being of value and being very different. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what you stand for as a unit, in this case, as bridgemen, or in this case, as guards, you know, I think that it's too gatekeepy. It's too clubby for me. Like Renarin, if Renarin came in and wasn't doing any training and didn't have
just
like
hanging out, wearing the coat.
Wearing like exactly
right.
if he just wanted to be a part of it, like to you know claim something but that's not what he's done. Mm-hmm. Here I think he's treated with like a lot of respect,
right
so that I think
I,
for me anyways, I'll maintain that I think Renarin's in the right place doing it for the right reasons.
I absolutely think Renarin's in the right place. I think this is really good for him.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But I guess my point is that I can see why the people who don't like him being in there would feel that way, because they're like, well, we earned this patch and you didn't.
And I totally,
but I would rail against my own thought here and say that in a completely different way, Renarin's been carrying a different bridge his whole life. You know, he's been having these
fits.
He's the younger, less good looking. I'm doing quotes because we know Renarin is a cutie as well. But he's less good looking than his brother. He's not going to be the heir to the Colin family.
Right.
So he's had a different struggle his whole life. Right. Like I get
that. We all have something. We all have a bridge to carry.
Right.
And that is the point of the bridgemen and the gatekeepers, is that we all have something to share in the unit. If you want to be a part of this unit and you're stepping up and you're doing the training and you're keeping up, then you belong here.
Yeah.
Right. But I understand what you're saying completely. Anyways, let's move on.
Okay.
Renarin frustrated. Yeah. We'll need the bridgeman again. Dalinar says, if something goes wrong, we may need a quick retreat. I'll prepare bridges 5 and 12 for the day, sir, Kaladin says. Those two seem nostalgic for their bridges and talk about the bridge runs with fondness.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't those bloodbaths? Navani asks. They were, but soldiers are a strange lot, Brightness. A disaster unifies them. These men would never want to go back, but they still identify as bridgemen.
Hmm. And I like this here. General Call nods in understanding. Nods. He's a soldier, too. He gets it.
Though Navani still seemed baffled.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they would never want to go back. So, okay, so that's that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take my position here, Dalinar says, holding up a map.
Yeah.
We can scout the meeting plateau first while I wait. It apparently has some old rock formations. Well, that sounds good, Brightness, Teshov says. It does, Adolin says, except for one thing. You won't be there, Father.
Yeah. Here's the number
cool,
two
eh?
Thing, right?
Here's the number two thing. And he says, Adolin, I know you think this is too dangerous, but it is too dangerous. The assassin is still out there, and he attacked us last on the very day the Parshendi messenger came to camp. Now, we have a meeting with the enemy out on the Shattered Plains. Father, you can't go. I have to. Adolin, this could mean an end to the war. It could mean answers. Why they attacked in the first place. I will not give up this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to give it up, Adolin says. We're just going to do things a little differently.
I like
how.
I like this. Before we get to the meat of it here, I like how Dalinar is not giving a suggestion. He's not saying, oh, I have an idea, Father. He's saying, we are going to do this differently.
Right. Right. Well, the way I interpreted this is, you know, it's it's the son becoming like the father.
He's becoming the brown thorn right here. He's
the brown thorn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the blonde thorn, because he's got the blonde hair, the blonde thorn.
I think he's the gray thorn, probably.
The gray thorn? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So he's, that's the way I sort of interpreted this, because you're right. He's not asking.
No, he's telling them.
He's saying, we're going to do this differently.
Yeah.
For one thing, he says, I'm going to go in your place. Impossible. I won't risk my son to father. This is not subject to discussion. See right there. He's telling the Blackthorn.
Right.
And then the next paragraph, it says, it was difficult to deny his father, Dalinar Colan.
This is what you talked about before.
Yeah. Did his father realize the presence that he had, the way he moved people about by sheer force of expectation?
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And imagine, we really haven't got much in the way of knowing about the Blackthorn,
right.
I'd say, about the way he was as the Blackthorn.
Yeah, we don't really know who the Blackthorn really was.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, was he also a diplomat? Like, did he tell people what to do in
a
certain way?
Well, we know that he said that being a diplomat now is different than what he was before. Before, he was a warmonger.
Right.
Right?
A warmonger, yeah. Right. Well, it says here, nobody contradicted him. Dalinar did what he wanted. And in many ways, he was the same man. So again, this is where he goes against Sadeas.
Yeah.
He was the same man he had been 20 years ago when he'd conquered a kingdom. He was the Blackthorn, and he got what he wanted.
Right.
Except today.
Yeah,
today,
exactly,
he does not get what he wants, because
right.
I am speaking.
Right.
You are too important, Adeline says. Deny that. Deny that your visions are vital. Deny that if you die, Alethkar would fall apart. Deny that every single person in this room is less important than you are.
I love it. It's so good.
I love that.
Great speech.
I was searching there for an alternate title involving deny.
Yeah.
So the title is Heirs.
Right.
But I love that triple deny that he gives him. Like, oh no, it's four. He gives him four denies. Like, here are 4 points. Try to refute them, Father.
Yeah, exactly.
And he can't.
No.
There is no rebuttal. There is no retort. Dalinar says, it shouldn't be so. The kingdom needs to be strong enough to survive the loss of one man, no matter who. Okay, so there it is. So there's a counterpoint.
Right.
And
okay. then Adelin says, well, it's not there yet.
Right. And to get it there, we're going to need you. And that means you need to let us watch out for you. I'm sorry, Father, but once in a while, you just have to let someone else do the job. You can't fix every problem with your own hands.
You know what's really funny? For me, when he says those lines, when he says those two lines, but once in a while, you have to let someone else do their job. You can't fix every problem with your own hands.
I
feel like he's telling Dalinar that, but this is also directed at Kaladin. You can't fix every problem with your own hands. And Kaladin says, he's right, sir.
I love it. Yeah.
It's like this dual thing here that's happening. You know, one, it's great that Kaladin speaks up on Avalon's behalf here, saying he's right.
Right.
Which is, and then almost feel the bromance blooming here.
Well, and Kaladin knows this firsthand, because Kaladin could not have gotten out of that situation by himself.
Right.
He had to train and create Bridge 4 and turn it into what it became.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no way out. If he hadn't have relied on other hands, if he had just relied on his own, actually, to be honest, I think if Kaladin had relied on just his own hands, he would have tossed himself
probably
into the chasm.
Yeah, you're probably right. But this moment is really cool, because it shows that there's more than just a son telling a father how it is going on right now.
Right,
it's really great.
Right. Yeah, my biggest fear here is, of course, as I said before, with this weeping thing, I think, you know, foreboding, sort of thing. And that's why, like, I was already really nervous about this meeting, because I thought, well, he's going to go out there to meet, and something really bad's going to happen back home.
Yeah.
So that was my prediction, and I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So you really shouldn't be taking the risks out there on the plains, not if there's another option. I fail to see there is one, Dalinar says. Oh, yes, there is. But I'm going to need to borrow Renarin's shard plate.
Yeah. And we know that's because that was Dalinar's shard plate before, right?
Right.
So Esh and I fought Dalinar in that shard plate. So if Adolin wears it, well, guess what? He looks more like his father.
The strangest thing that Adolin is thinking about is not having to wear his father's old armor. So he talks a bit about when you put on plate, it kind of adapts to your body, kind of almost like magical items sometimes.
That's
in
what
fantasy.
I was going to say that in the info dump. We'll talk about a little more about that later. Yeah, sure.
And it wasn't the strange fact that he's at the front of the force when they're actually heading out for this meeting, because Adolin is used to being out in the front now. He's been leading the men for over 6 weeks bridge runs and things. So it's not that. The strangest thing was riding his father's horse.
Yeah.
Gallant. This large black animal was bulkier and squatter than Sureblood, which was Adolin's horse. Mm-hmm. Gallant looked like a warhorse even when compared to other Raishadium.
Yeah.
So far as Adolin knew, no man had ever ridden him but Dalinar.
Right.
And Raishadium were finicky that way. It had taken a lengthy this might even be my highlight for the chapter in many ways. It had taken a lengthy explanation from Dalinar to Gallant, the Raishadium horse, to even allow his son on his back.
Remember we talked about how intelligent they were?
Explanation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, we're not talking horse whispering here. We're talking horse dialectic debate. Like, we're talking full on horse conversations. Yeah. We're not like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
It's like, we're talking I can see Dalinar pacing back and forth, but listen, I'm serious. Yeah.
Listen. You got it. It's my son.
You know him. You've known him since he was a little boy.
Yeah, right. I loved it. I think that's so great. It did feel odd climbing on a horse that wasn't Sureblood. He and his Raishadium were more than simply a rider and horse, and he found himself oddly melancholy to be out on a ride without Sureblood.
Yeah, oddly.
So there's two little mentions of odd there, and then next paragraph I thought was interesting. And he says, foolishness, I have to stay focused. The procession is proceeding at the meeting plateau. The plateau was close to the Alethi side, but a lot further south than he had ever gone.
Right.
So kind of a new territory for him. Mm-hmm. The Parshendi weren't there yet. When the scouts reported that the plateau was secure, Adolin was going to cross the mobile bridge with Gallant. So he approaches the rock mound at the center, and it really was odd. He circles it, noticing its shape rigid in places, almost like, and the next paragraph, Sean, was, it's a chasm fiend.
Yeah.
And I got as a first-time reader, I got goosebumps, and I thought, oh my gosh, here we go. This is going to be a big battle. And again, I was wrong.
Right.
A statue. No, it was too natural. But this is a chasm fiend. It had died here centuries ago. And instead of being blown away, it had been crusted over with creme.
Isn't that cool?
It's so cool. But what's cooler about it was that to look at it initially, even though they've battled these creatures very close up. So if you remember way back in Way of Kings, we got a first up close sort of, a battle with one, right? So they've been close up to them. And initially it blended in with the rock.
Right.
Just couldn't see it. But then he saw it.
Yeah.
Which makes it really, really interesting. The creme had duplicated the creature's form, clinging to the carapace and tombing it. So I thought that was interesting, entombing it almost as if, I mean, there goes my D&D brain. Could it be resurrected? Hmm. Right? Entombing it, like it's asleep.
Like preserved or something?
Well, I mean, you could animate it, right? Maybe, like bring it back.
I mean, if you're a necromancer. Yeah.
The hulking rock seemed like a creature born of stone, like the ancient stories of Voidbringers.
Right.
And I want to talk about this just a minute, that these hulking. So in the ancient stories with the Voidbringers, these rock-like creatures, monsters, whatever they are, coming from the inanimate. I think that is interesting. And is that the void? Like, is the void that which is not alive? Like, we think it's not alive, but it actually is. I was just ruminating on that a little bit, that, you know, like we look at a rock Some of us might see something inanimate. Others amongst us might see a spirit in that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I would.
Anyways, I'm fascinated by that story, by that
this
concept
line,
of yeah,
the hulking rock seemed like a creature born of stone, like the ancient stories of Voidbringers. That line takes me back to the beginning of this book, when Dalinar had a vision where he was in the Pure Lake, water up to his knees, fighting a battle with a Radiant and a bunch of people who were by her side, who also seemed to glow, and something came out of the water, and they called it a Thunderclast. And it was born of rock. It was this gigantic rock.
Yeah,
rock
the
thing.
Thunderclast. Yeah.
So
I'm glad you brought that up. That's great.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Again, born of rock. I love the idea.
Yeah.
It's great. The Parshendi were coming. Behind him arrayed a group of bridgemen, 10 in number, including that Parshman. I like he says, including that Parshman.
Right.
Little Shallan judgmental going
there,
too.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Anyway, Captain Kaladin had remained with Dalinar, and I was, as a first-time reader, I was relieved by that. I'm like, okay, well, at least Kaladin is with Dalinar.
Yeah, someone's protecting
Dalinar. Because, again, you got to think, like, from my perspective, I don't know what's coming. So
yeah, you don't know.
I really thought that Dalinar was going to be attacked, like, and or maybe Kaladin.
Right.
Or the king.
Right. You could see a scenario where Adolin's like, listen, you're too important. You stay behind. I'll go in your place.
I'll go.
Kaladin gets attacked. And then Kaladin's like, oh, shit. And he's got to go and help him, save him again on a plateau or something. Right.
And then Adolin feels so guilty because his plan didn't work.
Right.
And that's where I thought
he
this
hates
was going.
Kaladin even more because he bailed him out.
Right. Yeah.
The stupid vicious circle again. Yeah.
So that's what I was dealing with while reading this, like in the moment. Like I'm like, I'm carrying all these heavy emotions and things. And I'm like freaking out. Anyway. Okay. So part of him wished for, this is crazy. Oh, hang on. We're not quite there yet. Kaladin had remained in camp. Part of him wished that the assassin would come today so that Adolin could try himself again. Of all the duels that he had in the future waiting for him, this was the most important.
Right.
To kill the man who had killed his uncle. So even more so than Sadeas' betrayal, this assassin kind of on the list, on Arya's list here. Or I should say on, what's his name's list from Vox Machina?
Oh, Percy's revenge list.
I love the lists. Moving on. 200 Parshendi crossed the next plateau. And I love this so much. Jumping gracefully, landing on the meeting plateau.
Mm-hmm.
I love the different approaches of these two peoples, right?
Really
you've got
neat.
These bridges laid down, these Rhyshadiums, you've got this army, and you're crossing over, and it's kind of clunky.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got these graceful, you know, launching beings. They land with accuracy and dexterity.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like Cole, I might add.
Yeah.
It had been years since men and Parshendi had met without blood being spilled. So this is years in the making.
This is something different, right?
Something different.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Adolin says, fetch my scribe. Brightness in Adara was carried up through the ranks in a palanquin. Dalinar wanted Navani with him, but ostensibly because he wanted her advice, but probably wanted to protect her too. So Dalinar wanted Navani with him. So again, I like that he had that protection with him.
Right.
Let's go, Adolin says, nudging Gallant forward. They cross the plateau, bringing brightness in Adara. A wizened matron with gray hair, and it says here, it's described, he'd seen sticks with more flesh than she had. So I guess she's fairly thin, this gal, this in Adara. But the Parshendi Shardbearer emerged from the ranks and strode forward on the rocks, uncaring, unworried. This was a confident one.
Mm-hmm.
He dismounts on foot with Inadara at his side, and they stopped a few feet from the Parshendi. I am Eshinai. Do you remember me? No, Adolin says. His pitch, he's trying to... There's almost like I was thinking like a little bit of comedy could be here. Like,
yeah.
No. Like, I'm the, like, it's like Kevin McAllister. Speak? Well, it's like Kevin McAllister. Yeah. You know, I'm the father. I'm, you know,
yeah.
in Home Alone. Like, you know.
Yeah.
He's acting in his big man voice. Eschenai says, not surprising. I was young and unimportant when we first met. Barely worth remembering.
So this is, she's not talking about their fight, but she's talking about when the Parshendi were discovered, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Eschenai had a rhythm to her words, the way she emphasized them and where she paused. She changed tones, but the result was more of a chant than a song.
I love this description.
Inadara took out a writing board and span read and started to write down what was being said. I really like this too, this kind of real-time
span
interpretation. And Navani and Dalinar are able to communicate with his son. That's, what is this? Eschenai asks. I came alone as you asked, but I will record what is said and send it back to my generals. Eschenai did not raise her faceplate, and that's good because Well, they can keep up this ruse.
Right.
I was full again, first time reader, I'm thinking she's gonna call this out, she's gonna know that it's not Dalinar, she's gonna be insulted. This is not good.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Eschenai laughs. Aelin says, we are here to discuss the terms of a Parshendi surrender. That's not the point at all, she says.
Yeah.
Then what? You seemed eager to meet with me. Why? Things have changed since I spoke with your son, Blackthorn. Right. Important things. What things? Now, okay, interesting there. She knows him as Blackthorn.
Right. She thinks this is Dalinar.
Right. But things have changed since I spoke with your son.
Right. The listeners, the Parshendi, clearly know his reputation of being the Blackthorn.
Right.
Right. Things you cannot imagine, she says.
Yeah.
And we know what's changed with her.
Well, we're talking about the discovery of the new form, right?
Right. We know that something's different. They don't know. She's not saying, but we as the reader definitely know that something within Eschenai has changed.
Right. And this is war form, correct?
This is storm form.
Or storm form, sorry.
Right.
Storm form.
So I would be remiss not to read this part here. This is from I-8 Interlude. That's at the end of the Eschenai part. And she says, Eschenai held out her arms to the sides and spoke in a loud voice, cast aside despair and sing the rhythm of joy. I have looked into the depths of the Storm Rider's eye, and I have seen his betrayal. I know his mind, and I've seen his intent to help humans against us. But my sister has discovered salvation. With this form, we can stand on our own, independent, and we can sweep our enemies from this land like leaves before the tempest. The humming to awe grew louder, and some began to sing. Eschenai gloried in it. She pointedly ignored the voice deep within her that was screaming in horror. So, I would like to point out that there is a part of Eschenai that doesn't want any of this.
Any of this, right. Yeah, but she's in a new form.
But she's in a new form now.
Right.
Right. So I would, I think it's an appropriate moment to bring it up because we're dealing with literally a different person, you know, when she says things you cannot imagine. She's in this new form. So, yeah.
Right. Things you cannot imagine. And Inadara leaned up to him, whispering what Navani and Dalinar had written to say. We tire of this war, Parshendi, Aelin says. So that's interesting, too. Like, he won't use her name. Like, why didn't he say Eschenai? I think he might not have those lessons down from Kaladin where names are important.
Maybe.
We tire of this war, Parshendi. Your numbers dwindle. We know this. Let us make a truce, one that would benefit us both. We are not as weak as you believe, Eschenai says. Aelin found himself frowning. When she'd spoken to him before, she seemed passionate, inviting. Now she was cold and dismissive. So There's that little clue right there about, just the changes. I mean,
right.
Stormform, it's interesting. What's probably the most interesting about this exchange, which was not the way I thought it was going to turn out, is that even despite referring to themselves and herself being a listener, she's not listening.
No.
This form and maybe others just prevent you from doing that very same thing that you espouse that you're all about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What do you want? Adolin says, how can there be peace? There will be peace, Blackthorn, when one of us is dead. I came here because I wanted to see you with my own eyes, and I wanted to warn you. We have just changed the rules of this conflict. Squabbling over gemstones no longer matters. Actually, hang on a sec. I want to pause here. Not pause the recording this. Yeah. I'm just saying I want to pause here because I just had a thought that this could be dangerous, that Adolin now is done this ruse to be the Blackthorn. Like, what if Esh and I believes it, that this man, this younger man, is the Blackthorn? Mm-hmm. I don't think that can be accurate. Like, there should be some reference or history that it's not this man.
Yeah.
But I'm saying mistaken identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I just had a thought about that. She turns to go. And he's just like, I can't believe it. This meeting is going up in a puff of smoke.
Right.
She's saying that there, you know, the truce or peace is kind of pointless until one of us is dead. Squabbling over gemstones doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Which what does that mean? Does that mean that they're not going to engage in fighting over the gemstones?
Right.
In the future, is that what that means?
He thinks she makes it sound like they were playing their own game all this time, not desperate at all.
Right.
And they know they were desperate. They could tell by the tactics on the field and stuff, right? Could the Alethi have misjudged everything so profoundly? And we know that Dalinar had this thought before too, right? Like, we didn't...
Yeah.
Maybe we misunderstood our enemy.
Wait, Adolin cries. Why are you acting like this? What is wrong? You really want to end this? Yes, please, I want peace, regardless of the cost. Then you will have to destroy us. Why, Adolin repeats, why did you kill Gavilar all those years ago? Why betray our treaty? King Gavilar? He should not have revealed his plans to us that night. Poor fool. He did not know. He bragged, thinking we would welcome the return of our gods. Ooh. She shook her head, and then jogs off, armor clinking.
That's the juicy part of the whole chapter. Maybe this whole episode here, dude. Let's reread that. King Gavilar, he should not have revealed his plans to us that night. So the night died, he revealed his plans to the listeners. Poor fool. Yeah. He did not know. He bragged, thinking we would welcome the return of our gods.
Right. But no.
So Gavilar had a plan.
Right.
That he to bring shared them back. With them.
Right.
And they disagreed with what he was going to do. And so they killed him. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
Mm. This is the great thing is we're a book and a half in and we're finally getting a little bit more clear of an image of what happened like at the very beginning of the series.
On that fateful night. Yeah. So Adolin steps back feeling useless, and that's kind of the way I felt too as a reader. I'm like, whoa, like what just happened here? Like there's no peace. Like
nothing to fight. There's at the very least you were also worried that there was going to be a fight breaking out. That's something that Adolin can do. He's in Shardblade. He has a Shardblade. He's in Shard armor. Like he could do this, but there's no fight either.
A reply comes from Dalinar. Return to the war camps. There is nothing you or I myself could have done. Clearly, her mind is already made up. And Adolin spends the return ride brooding.
Yeah.
When he reaches the war camps hours later, he finds his father in conference with Navani, Kahl, and Tashav, and the army's four battalion lords.
Mm-hmm.
They pored over the words that Inadara had sent. A group of Parshmen servants quietly bring wine and fruit. Erinev, which is what I think he's one of the battalion lords, watch from the side of the room.
No, it says Teleb is one of the battalion lords. Teleb was wearing the plate that Adolin had won from Erinev. Erinev's one of the guys.
Oh, it's Teleb. That's right.
Erinev's one of the guys he beat in the dueling ring. And so Teleb is wearing that armor now. Because it's got to be used, right? You can't win these shards and not use them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, that with Teleb, I like it here. It says his people had once ruled Alethkar.
Yeah.
So he comes from a
high
line.
Royalty, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what did he think of all this?
Right.
The man usually kept his opinions to himself.
Mm-hmm.
I should have let you go, Adolin says to his father. It wasn't a trap. Perhaps you could have talked some sense into her. These are the people who murdered my brother on the very night that they signed a treaty with him. It seems they have not changed at all from that day. You did perfectly, son. We know everything we need to. We do? I have to agree with Adolin here. Really? We know everything? No, we don't.
We don't, but we know enough to make Dalinar's decision clear now.
Yeah, Dalinar says, yes, we know that they will not agree to peace no matter what. My conscience is clear. Interesting there. My conscience is clear what? To do what? To keep killing?
No, to end the war, yeah. He tried.
Well, to keep killing.
He tried.
Yeah, he tried.
Right?
Yeah. What is this, Adolin asks, noting a troop movement symbols that were on this the outspread of maps. They were all pointed across the shattered plains. Dalinar says, it's a plan of assault. The Parshendi will not deal with us, and they are planning something big, something to change the war. And the time has come to bring the fight directly to them and end this war one way or another. Stormfather, and if we're surrounded while we're out there, we will take everyone, our whole army, and as many of the High Princes as will join me. Soul casters for food. The Parshendi won't be able to surround that large a force, and even if they did, it wouldn't matter. We'd be able to stand against them. This is crazy.
This is a full-on assault.
Right, and to take all of the army? Like, aren't you leaving yourself open for other attacks, like Sadeas?
Mm-hmm.
Other high princes that won't go with you?
Right.
Because of the visions, because of your... I mean, you almost got slaughtered on at the tower,
yep.
At the betrayal.
It is a little reckless, isn't it?
I think it's really reckless.
But
I don't.
There were scratches on the floor that said "seek the center," so maybe he's taking that as it's okay to do what you want to do now. Who knows? Dalinar is a complex motherfucker for sure.
We can leave right after the final high storm before the weeping. Nivani says. So it appears that she's for this.
Yeah.
It is the light year, and so we'll have steady rains, but no high storms for weeks. We won't be exposed to one while out on the plains.
Which is the big reason why they've never done a full assault, right? Because if you're out there on a high storm, you're all dead.
Right. It would also put them out on the shattered plains alone, within days of the date that had been scratched on the walls and floor. We have to beat them to it, Dalinar says softly. Interrupt whatever it is they're planning before the countdown ends. I need you to duel more high-profile matches, as high-profile as you can. Win shards for me, son. I'm dueling Elit tomorrow. From there, I have a plan for my next target. Good. To succeed out on the plains, we will need shard bearers, and we will need the loyalty of as many high princes as will follow me. Focus your dueling on the shard bearers of the faction loyal to Sadeas, and beat them with as much fanfare as you can manage. I will go to the neutral high princes and will remind them of their oaths to fulfill the vengeance pact. If we can take shards from those who follow Sadeas and use them to end the war, it will go a long way toward proving what I've been saying all along, that unity is the path to Alethi greatness. Adolin says, I'll see it done.
Jeez.
And that's the chapter.
That's it. That's the chapter.
Well, I think that you and I are maybe in agreement here that it seems reckless. Like, I don't know. I don't know about this plan at all. I'm not confident in it at all.
It seems reckless.
I mean,
Dalinar thinks it's needed, though. Like, you know, they need to do something.
Right, but didn't he? He already tried this. He's right. Already tried to unite the High Princes, and it was a resounding no.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disaster. It was a look. We're High Princes. We want gem hearts and money. We want a return on investment. Like this war that you want to wage out in the middle of an area that we're not even familiar with,
right?
And you want us to go out there to slaughter an entire people, to what end?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard sell. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not buying it. I think this is really odd behavior. I'll say that. This is odd.
Well,
it's odd coming from Dalinar. I find, you know, we can talk about Eshinai having a new form. What about Dalinar?
Yeah. He's
like,
desperate.
Has he not learned? Like, what form is he in right now? This doesn't seem very calculated.
I do like he says that we have to stop whatever it is that they're planning. We have to get out there before the countdown ends. He clearly thinks there's a link between this countdown and what mm-hmm. Eshinai said when she says...
Right.
Where is it here? And she says... We have just changed the rules of the conflict. Like, there's... You know, things are different now.
Right. I wish she had explained herself, but I suppose she doesn't want to reveal her cards. But again, what's their end game? Like, she basically declared that one of us has to, in order for there to be peace, I think she even said the both of us have to die.
Or no, she said one of us has to kill the other, pretty much.
Is it one of us?
Yeah. It's the old Harry Potter Voldemort prophecy for one to live, both must die, or something.
Yeah.
But so, what's your highlight of this chapter?
I don't know. I don't know. It wasn't abundantly clear to me, to be perfectly honest.
Mine is you can't fix every problem with your own hands. And
yeah.
How that surprisingly seemed to be being told to Dalinar and Kaladin at the same time. And I really like that.
Right. And I like it when Adolin basically is taking charge
mm-hmm.
over his father and saying, this is how we're going to do it.
He's made a decision and that's it.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, part of that whole thing is when he says that you can't fix every problem with your own hands. You know, oh, and you know what that all, you know what? I forgot to bring this up. That line also reminds me of when you fail as a surgeon. You know, like you can't always fix things with your hands. Mm-hmm. Sometimes like when Kaladin's father was trying to explain
right.
how you're so easily loved and so easily hated.
Right.
Because if you don't save them, you know, you're hated for it.
Right.
Right. And you can't always solve a problem with your own two hands. And that's, I mean, a surgeon
should
knows
have learned
that all
that.
Too
yeah,
well.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, a fascinating chapter, but again, I am left feeling really, I just have no idea what's next. I just don't.
I mean, you're
I don't.
Good. You're not supposed to know what's
I
coming next.
I just don't.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I find that as we were talking about last night, I have fewer predictions for this book.
You do.
Because
the other thing too is because I think you understand the world a little bit better, and so you're not just like willy-nilly saying, oh, this is going to happen or this is going to happen. You're kind of letting the story happen to you, which is great too, right?
Well, I have to, right? It's, you know, but yeah, this Stormform, if she's not listening and if Eshinai is inside screaming.
Yeah.
Like, this is a compromised form, which, of course, almost brought about consciously. Now, who is the other listener that it was going to be?
Oh, Venli, her sister.
Form? Right.
Right.
And then Eshinai stepped in. No, I don't want that.
Yeah.
It
should be me that
I'll
does
take
it. Yeah.
Right.
Because the reason she said it, she almost did the exact same thing that Dalinar did, or that Adolin did. Adolin says, I'll go to the meeting. You're too important. And Eshinai said, I'll test Stormform, because if something goes wrong with me, we still need you, the scholar, who can discover more forms. You're more important than I am in this situation. So that's a really cool little comparison here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, both Adolin and Eshenai have stepped into the role that their loved one wanted primarily, like at first, but they've taken it upon themselves to be the representative of the thing. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Eshenai, if this storm form is going to prove to be a problem, let's say, Eshenai is going to have to break free. She's going
to
somehow
break free.
She's going to have to break out of this. The biggest question that I want to know is, are they going to fight over the chasm fiends and over these chrysalis, over these gemstones, these gem hearts? Are they still going to do this?
Well, it sounds like Eshenai is saying they are not going to be fighting over the gem hearts anymore. So it sounds like the LFE have a clear play to all the gem hearts that are there.
Yeah, but that's not the way they work.
No.
It's going to be squabbling high princes now over these gemstones.
Right.
And they're going to be fighting against each other, which of course is an advantage to your potential enemy.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool. Yeah. You know what else is really cool is an info dump.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Info dump. So we have a little bit of stuff to talk about here. We've kind of gone over some of it. I really loved when Adolin said plants that hide in their shells did so longer back home. And I wonder if that's just an environmental, like things are maybe, I don't know. It's very strange that here at the Shattered Plains, they come out quicker of their shell after a high storm than back home. Back home, they stay in their shells longer, which is curious.
Was that the reference?
Yeah. He said that plants back home, because they actually stay in their shells longer. Whereas here in the near the Shattered Plains, they come out quicker after a high storm.
Well, the only thing I can speak there, in terms of plants in our world, in the real world that we know, is that things like storms and wind and rain, like bracing those storms and things like that, are actually good for plants because it invigorates root growth. It makes them stronger and they grow.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's sort of a subtle hint there that if you're in the storms or experiencing difficulty, it's an opportunity to grow.
Right. Maybe.
Whereas if you're back home and everything's safe, you stay in your shell, you're protected.
Right. That's interesting.
You know?
It could be that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's harder at the Shattered Plains to find water, so they need to escape right after the high storm to soak up some of that moisture that's left over. Whereas back home, it's actually easier to find the moisture because it's not as harsh or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the place of meeting had odd rock formations. And it's not the first time we hear about this on the Shattered Plains, of these odd rock formations. And we actually get a face-to-face meeting with Dalinar, or Adolin, and a creme-covered chasm fiend. So that leaves me to ask the question, these other rock formations, what we saw.
Yeah.
Is there something buried under those? So what lies beneath these other moments we've heard characters say, oh, that's a really odd rock formation. So it's kind of interesting. We talked earlier about shard plate being like magical armor. So in D&D, you know, you have a half orc wears a magical set of armor and can give it to a halfling, and then that halfling can put on the same magic armor and it will shrink down to its size. And it sounds like shard plate is very similar, which is really, really cool. We talked about Rishadium. Gallant looked like a warhorse compared to other Rishadium, like Sureblood, which means Gallant is just that much bigger. And then you also remarked how intelligent it was that Dalinar had to have an actual conversation with the horse to allow, you know,
conversation.
Yeah, this just pumps up the lore and the myth of these creatures even more, right? So,
I love
it's just
it.
Really cool. And then the last thing that we have to do on Info Dump is Jim Tor from Reddit asked me to ask you, can you please say three nice things about Navani? He says that you're just super, super high, hyper suspicious of everyone, and you don't trust anything since your Way of Kings betrayal, and that breaks his heart. So he would like you to say three nice things about Navani.
Three nice things?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, three nice things. Well, she appears to be a very intelligent person.
That's one.
So she's well read. She's intelligent. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. I like the way that she makes Dalinar feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little uncomfortable at first, but there's a passion there.
Mm-hmm. That's
that
two.
Has been there for some time. So I think I like that about about her. Let me think of that third one. Maybe I should get back to you about that third one.
Oh, maybe we'll leave that as a cliffhanger. Oh, till next time.
Well, I like the way that they describe her as being intelligent and beautiful. And
she seems determined as well, right? She's very determined.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. And she does, so far anyway, she's exhibiting great loyalty to Dalinar.
Mm-hmm. So she's loyal.
All that seems to be in place. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. That's number three.
I read into other text that probably led me down a path that is not good.
Right.
So, and that's fair.
Yeah.
So,
Jim Tor, hopefully you enjoyed that, that little moment. So for next episode, we are going to be covering chapter 52, only one chapter this time.
Okay.
Chapter's called Into the Sky. So make sure that if you are reading along with us, you are reading the right chapter. I wanted to say a shout out to our patrons again. I've been really enjoying this whole thing where we read the whole patron list to acknowledge everyone involved. And we got a few more new people, so let's go get to it. We want to thank new patrons, Megan Lloyd and Richard Fetherston from the new acquisitions of our Patreon team. So thank you very much for being involved in the Patreon team and signing up. We really, really appreciate it. It's so really cool that you guys want to be a part of it. For existing members as Ilya Serdin and Daniel Lee, Mies Gregory, Elvira, Denver Rose, David Clamage, Andrew S., Pacman in Ohio, Jason Stock, Ashlyn Lee, Anna P., Joseph Bruno, Pat Bevins, Thomas Kovar, Matthew Eaton, Cosette, William Brown, James Reed, Steph Baum, Alex Trant, Joey William, Christopher Jack, Brendan R., Brandon Comer, Jasper, Silver Lumos, Joshua, Nisala, Ryan, Josh, Alexander, Janzi, Zach Helton, Wick, Joseph Mingoya, Alex DeFour, Daniel Whidden, Werewolf Will, John, Jake DeFeo, Robert Goebel, My Mom, Sue, Arezu, Bruce, Joel, Don Chalice, Papino, and Jack's wife, Linda, and of course, our good friend, Mike. Thank you very much, everyone, for being part of the Patreon team. We love you very much.
Yes, thanks again so much.
Yeah, we can't do this without you, so thank you so much for all your support. I guess that's the end of the episode, everyone. If you want to be part of the Patreon team, go to patreon.com/heroesof and sign up for the team. There are all kinds of goodies there. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofacathra@gmail.com. You can go to Twitter at heroesofone or at the StormPod on Instagram. That's probably the best place to reach us. Anyways, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.